This podcast has been brought to you by Rock the House, your source for production, entertainment, and multimedia solutions. RTHgroup.com.
We're going to welcome our speakers. If they are here, if they'll join us here up front. Renee, if you'd like to go ahead and have a seat for us. And Eileen, if you'll have a seat for us. And I believe Rabbi is probably still tied up in a meeting, I'm going to venture. Very nice. Well, while we're waiting for Rabbi to join us, I would like to introduce our speakers, of course. And I would like to start with Renee Heiger. She is the executive director here at Temple Emmanuel. Renee began working at the Temple Emmanuel in 1997. She oversees the temple's finances, supervises the support staff and membership director, and ensures that the building is maintained. Renee also works directly with the members, non-members, and organizations interested in planning special events and meetings here at the facility. She was also the point person for the relocation project. Renee is a trained social worker with 8.5 years experience at the B'nai B'rith Youth Organization, Ohio Northern Region. She received her BS at the Ohio State University and her master's degree from the Mandel School of Applied Social Sciences of Case Western Reserve University. Renee is a past president of the Cleveland Area Synagogue and Temple Administrators, and is a member of the National Association of Temple Administrators, where she has chaired various committees for their national conventions. In addition, Renee has facilitated sessions and leadership development throughout North America. Renee is a specialist in the area of adolescent development, teaches that's subject to the nannies and training at the Alexandria School in North Solon. In her spare time, she does volunteer work for the Chagrin Falls Academy of the Performing Arts, where her daughter Cody is a student and aspiring actor. So ladies and gentlemen, let's give a nice round of applause for Renee. Also with us on the panel is Eileen Benson from Bridal Consulting by Eileen. Eileen Alfonso Benson was born in Bogota, Colombia. Her family moved to Akron, where Eileen attended school and went on to college at the University of Akron and graduated with a degree in marketing in 1987. Eileen also took fashion classes at Kent State University. During college, Eileen worked in retail as a manager of Dillard's Bridal Department and then was hired by the owner of Charlotte's West to manage and be the bridal buyer. Eileen went on buying trips to New York City and put together local bridal shows for Charlotte's West every January. In 1987, after getting married, Eileen worked in outside sales for a medical company. She started planning weddings for some of her brides from Charlotte's West. The wedding planning was a hobby on some weekends, but over the years and 3 kids later, this hobby became a business. Eileen has 4 employees, and many of her weddings have been featured in the Knot magazine, as well as Akron Life and Leisure, and a recent wedding will be featured in Cleveland Weddings. Eileen has also been hired to plan private parties and fundraising events. Eileen has appeared on Channel 3 News to talk about weddings and on a talk show of Western Reserve Society Neotropolis. Eileen lives in Copley with her husband, Art, and 3 children, Alyssa, Michael, and Kyle. Please give a round of applause for Eileen. As soon as the rabbi joins us, we'll be sure to read the rabbi's bio as well. But I would like to go ahead and get started with Renee. And Renee, we'd like you to share some information about the temple with us and a little bit about the food rules, if you will.
Okay. Very strange to be mic'd and very strange to be in front of you because I'm always behind the scenes. You will see me texting back and forth because I'm trying to get the rabbi out of his meeting to get here, and you'll also see that I have a board meeting, so I'm going to be running back and forth when that starts. But I just wanted to welcome everybody to Temple Emmanuel. We're thrilled to have everybody here and to co-sponsor and support this event this evening. Temple Emmanuel is a Reformed Jewish congregation with a supplemental religious school and a full-day, year-round preschool and daycare center. Together with our 500 families, we're celebrating our 65th anniversary this year. 3 years ago, this past August, we moved to this location here in Orange Village, And our new facility was built to accommodate worship services, of course, with seating of 240 in our main sanctuary, which was right on the other side of this wall that you will be seeing soon, and seating for 100 in a gorgeous chapel that I'm excited to give you a tour of later and show you. We also have our schools here with a full learning center, and we have opportunities for congregants and those in the general community to find ways to celebrate life cycle events like weddings and bar and bat mitzvahs here in the social hall, just outside in the atrium that we were just in, and also, as weather permits, outside in our terrace, which you can sort of see with some lighting. Happily, we've become a beacon for many of the organizations around Greater Cleveland who choose our facility for their meetings, conferences, luncheons, and evening dinner dances. Tonight, my new friend Vince has asked me to talk about our food policy and how it relates to events here in the facility. We have what you'll find in the various synagogues, depending on how traditional or how liberal they are, is that the food policy will be very different. So what I'm going to tell you is Temple Emmanuel's food policy, and as you have questions, I can sort of give you an idea of other food policies that you'll find at other synagogues. Here at Temple Emmanuel, we do not allow anything to be brought in the building that has pork or shellfish, and that's probably going to be pretty common with most synagogues anywhere in the world. Beyond this, menus need to be prepared so that dairy and meat are not served together during the cocktail and appetizer hour in the main meal. So either you do dairy or you do meat. While this seems difficult to plan for, we have found here that there's so many dairy substitutes, and many of Cleveland's finest caterers have been able to work up innovative and delicious menus even with this limitation. The food that is brought in here does not need to be kosher. In more traditional congregations, the food will need to be kosher. But here at Temple Emmanuel, it does not need to be kosher. Dessert, because it's usually served a bit after the main meal is done, we allow that to have dairy in it, even if the main meal had meat in it. I know it's a little confusing, but Temple Emmanuel has very interesting sort of food policy in itself, but it works for us and it works for our congregants and organizations and non-members that choose to have their events here. And we've had several events here in the 3 years that we've been here. Finally, we consider ourselves to be nut aware because it's really hard to say that you're a nut-free facility. And we ask that items that are prepared with this in mind so that, food items are not made with peanut oil or any form of nuts. And again, there's so many different ways in which things can be prepared that it hasn't really been an issue for us. I do want to thank Jessa and Vince for bringing this event to Temple Emmanuel. As I said before, I'm going to be running back and forth, but I am very much looking forward to meeting everyone and to giving you a tour of the facility. And just because it would be shameful for me not to promote our facility, I do have business cards on the registration table, and if any of you are looking to utilize our facility for an event, please take my business card, give me a call, and I can explain to you how to work this food policy in with your event. So, and the rabbi has arrived.
Yes, absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for Rabbi Danker. I'm going to pass you my microphone in just a second, but I want to give you the appropriate introduction. Ladies and gentlemen, Rabbi Stephen Danker has served as rabbi here at Temple Emmanuel since July of 2004. Rabbi Danker is a member of the Community Relations Committee of the Jewish Community Federation of Cleveland. He has quite the extensive resume, and I apologize, but I'm going to skip forward just a little bit. But he's very modest, as you could tell. But Rabbi, we just got done talking a little bit about the food policies here at Temple Emmanuel. And what I am hoping you can do for us this evening is give us an example of a traditional prayer that you would do to bless the food when it does need to be kosher.
Okay. All right. First, I don't know. God said to Moses, do not see the calf in its mother's milk. So Moses said, does that mean we can't eat milk and meat at the same meal? God said, don't see the calf in its mother's milk. Moses said, does that mean we have to have two sets of dishes? God said, don't see the calf in its mother's milk. Does that mean we have to hire a rabbi to make sure everything's kosher? And finally, God got disgusted and said, Moshe, do it your own way. Which is sort of the principle that you have to know. Everybody's doing it their own way. All right, so at a wedding, so am I talking about kashrut or am I talking about?
Just the blessing.
Just the blessing, okay. The traditional blessing for a meal that includes bread is Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Olam Asher Kitchanu I'm sorry, I said it wrong. This shows you how tired I am. Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Olam Hamotzi Lechem Min Haaretz. Blessed are you, Adonai, our God, ruler of the universe, who has brought forth food or bread from the earth. Because the word lechem in biblical Hebrew means food. In modern Hebrew, it means bread. In Arabic, it means meat. You're not up on your Arabic. Okay, we can help you with that. All right, that's the blessing. So traditionally at a Jewish wedding, either in the sanctuary, but for that's more common for a bar mitzvah, but usually at a wedding at the reception, they will drag out some old uncle who remembers the blessing, all right, who will make the blessing, and you will probably want a challah. What's a challah? Challah is an interesting word. It's also a biblical Hebrew word that had to do with a dough offering. Dough as in dough that you bake with, not dough as in money, although we do accept offerings of both kinds. You like that idea, huh? I used to listen to Reverend Ike all the time. Did you ever hear Reverend Ike? He was in Philadelphia, which is my second hometown, and he had a lot of rings. I was attracted to the jewelry, and I also liked the big white cars. Remember what he used to preach? Send me a blessing pledge. I mean, that was my kind of preacher. So what's a challah? It is actually a biblical Hebrew word for an offering of dough that you would give to God as you were baking something. And in fact, if you look at a kosher package of kosher baked goods these days, it will frequently say challah taken, which means that a ritual in place of the sacrifice has been taken place. What is a challah? Today, a challah is a special bread. For those of you of the Jewish faith who are familiar, it's usually used on the Sabbath or on holidays, so that the bread that you use on the Sabbath or the holidays or at a special occasion, like a wedding or a bar mitzvah, is going to be different than the bread that you eat all the time. And so the breads that our ancestors ate, wherever our ancestors came from, were usually relatively simple, you know, affairs. They're sort of ordinary. But if you wanted to make it a little special and you wanted to make it a little richer, you threw a couple eggs in. So basically, a challah nowadays in North America is an egg bread, usually braided, usually done with an egg wash so it's pretty. And for a wedding, the caterer will generally provide a big, big, big one that you'll then cut up and share it around. You don't have to do that, but that's probably what's going to happen. So somebody is going to make that blessing, either in Hebrew or in English. In some cases, it's expected that the rabbi or the cantor or the officiant will be doing that, although it's really more appropriate for a member of the family, for the bride and groom themselves, or for a member of the family to be doing that. It is not necessary for the clergy to do that. Was that what you wanted? Thank God. Thank God.
But we're not done with you yet, Rabbi, so don't go too far. But right now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to invite Eileen to walk us through briefly a Jewish wedding, because as soon as Eileen is done doing that for us, we're going to welcome everyone into the sanctuary, and we're going to do a mock Jewish wedding. And be prepared, because we will be asking for volunteers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I have mine. Okay. First of all, when we go in, you will see the chuppah, and I have this sheet that you should hang on to, because the terminology will come in handy, so you'll know what your clients are talking about if they're talking about a Jewish wedding. The glass that they break is, it could be, usually it's a light bulb. although now a lot of brides get a gift and they get a beautiful satin bag and it's actual glass. And I always grab this after the wedding. If you ever help with a wedding, make sure you take this, because they almost often take this and put it into a lucite cube or a item called a mezuzah that's on the doorway. And it usually is a glass mezuzah or lucite, and they have this put into their own mezuzah that'll be in their home. So always grab this. A light bulb has great sound effect, doesn't matter what wattage, just wrap it up. And a kiddush cup is usually put under the chuppah too on a small table. And I use white wine because of the gown. I don't know. It's usually in a conservative or Orthodox wedding, I always make sure the wine is kosher. But a kiddush cup is usually given to the groom when he has a bar mitzvah or even bought for a bris. So it's usually something from the family. So I always make sure after the wedding too that I gather this, because it's usually something that's very important to the family. And every once in a while I ask the rabbi, do you want me to pre-pour the wine? Sometimes I have some rabbis I work with, they like to put the wine in. So I have that ready. And every once in a while, a bride and groom will have a blessing with a tallis. A tallis is a prayer shawl in your sheet. And this one is actually more modern than probably what you'll see, or it's my husband's designer line. But it's sometimes wrapped around the couple, and a special prayer is given to them. And you want to make sure, too, that this is safe. If you do flowers for your florist, a lot of times a family will bring this into a florist and say, please attach this to the chuppah, the marriage canopy, because they want to be married underneath it. So they will then put this on the chuppah. It's important, though, when they do, that they know to put it on the inside. I had a florist put it outside, and then the family was like, we couldn't see it. It was facing the ceiling. But he didn't know. So just it usually is put on the inside, so when the couple looks up, it's on top of them. And then I always gather this, too, at the end so I can give it back to the family. So these are a few of the items. And there's a lot of differences between Jewish weddings and non-Jewish weddings, and I do a lot of both. I also do a lot of intermarriages, and it gets sort of not sticky, but there's just, for example, when you do an Orthodox wedding, you have to really find out how religious the family is, because there's certain traditions that are important to them, and there's certain ones that they may not care about doing. But when we do our mock wedding, the lineup is a little different. Grandparents usually are walk in as part of the processional. I usually, when I do a wedding, have the rabbi walk in first, because it kind of quiets everybody down and they know we're ready to start. The grandparents walk in, and then the gentlemen, the groomsmen, walk in, as opposed to coming from the side. They walk in, and then usually the groom walks with his parents, which is nice. And also, the difference, the parents don't sit in the front row. They actually go up and they stand on the sides of the chuppah. And the chuppah is supposed to symbolize the home. And like it says here, it's open on all sides to welcome family and guests from all corners of the earth. So the parents stand right underneath. They get to see everything. After the groom and his parents walk in, then the girls walk in, and if there's any flower girl ring bearer, they walk in. And then the bride, a lot of times, is walked in by both parents as well. Some of the synagogues I work in, the aisleway is not wide enough, so we have the bride and her dad walk, and sometimes we bring the mom in earlier in the processional. The bride does, a lot of times, circle the groom, and they're supposed to circle the groom seven times. Nowadays, a lot of brides are doing three times around the groom, and then the groom circling her three times, and then they're doing one together. But I turn the groom around. Most of the grooms will face the chuppah. I turn them around because I think it's nicer for all the guests to see the groom's face. And then they go up, and then the rabbi, once they're under the chuppah, the music stops, and then the rabbi begins the ceremony. Now, we'll talk, I don't know, Vince, if you want me to talk a little bit about the ketubah after, or...
About the ketubah,
okay.
And what it symbolizes and how
okay.
It is integrated into the ceremony, and then
okay.
We're going to pick our volunteers for.
Because I know the rabbi has a meeting in Renee, but I was going to. The ketubah is the document, the marriage contract. They do get a regular marriage license, and I usually also take that at rehearsal, but they pick out a ketubah, and the ketubahs nowadays are unbelievable. The brides are on websites, there are stores that carry them. This one, gosh, it's probably 20 years old, it's my sister's, and they usually are, they're very ornate. I have seen such beautiful ketubahs recently, and they have a ceremony of signing the ketubah that's done before the wedding begins. It's called, it's part of the bedecking, and a lot of times the family will gather. Sometimes they'll tell me who they want in that room and who's allowed in, because they like to keep it smaller. And they actually sign that before the ceremony, and then a lot of times it's placed in an easel by the chuppah, and sometimes the rabbi reads off of that. It is witnessed by two people that are not related to the bride or groom by blood. So it's a relative or friend that witness. They're usually Jewish, have to be able to write their name in Hebrew. If they can't, usually the rabbi shows them how. So, and Jenny, feel free to, but at any time if you think there's anything I'm missing. But so we usually have that done, and then we line everyone up. If it's an Orthodox wedding, it's a whole other thing. So you have the Orthodox, the Conservative, and Reform. If it's an Orthodox, a lot of times the men have a tish, which is in a separate room, and they usually have a little shots of whiskey. They do a little prayer. They do a lesson. They have some food, and it's only men. And then they start singing, and the women are in a separate room, and they usually have the mothers and the bride together, and people, the women come in and greet the women, and then all of a sudden you hear this loud singing, and it actually gives you chills. You see the groom sometimes lifted up on shoulders, and they dance the groom into the bride, and then they actually make sure that they put her veil down, and that's from the olden days, you know, when they wanted to make sure that they were marrying the right sister, the right bride, so they put the veil down, and then they start the ceremony. Right, Rabbi, am I?
Pretty much.
Good, good. So what we're going to do is we are going to pick a wedding party, and we're going to actually run through it, and then we're going to come back here and just talk about some of the latest trends and also some of the customs and how some of the weddings are different. So
that'll also be a great opportunity to do some questions and answers period for us as well. So if you'll please hold any questions until we come back to this room after the mock wedding in the sanctuary. But Eileen and I are going to pick some volunteers. We're going to start with the bride. All right, Deb. We got our bride.
Okay.
We need a groom. All right, we got Matt in the back, first hand up. Perfect, we have our bride and groom. Eileen, who else do we need?
We need parents, we need bridesmaids.
Great, give me a mother of the bride.
Mm-hmm.
How about a father of the groom, or father of the bride?
You'll be the father.
All right, perfect.
Okay.
How about a mother of the bride, or groom?
We need parents of the groom.
Mother of the groom? I saw your hand go up over there earlier. Perfect, how about father of the groom? Perfect,
good,
nice.
Good.
Excellent. Who else do we need?
Angela and Deidre, will you be bridesmaids, please?
All right, that's decided.
Yeah.
Who else do we need? We need two groomsmen.
Scott and I don't know anybody else.
But we need one more groomsman.
Yeah, okay.
All right, we got Steven up front. Perfect.
Okay.
Anyone else we need?
No,
do we need people to pretend they're signing the ketubah?
The witnesses, no, because that's done ahead of time. So
okay, we'll, so we don't need them.
We can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right, so what we're going to do is we're going to welcome everyone into the sanctuary. We're going to do our mock wedding, and then we're going to welcome everyone back here to continue the presentation. So please make sure you don't get lost along the way, but you're certainly welcome to grab a cocktail or certainly some food on the way back into the social hall. So please join us. We're going to loop around to the right and into the sanctuary. You could probably hear me if I didn't have the mic, but I don't have to yell, so this is really great. So we certainly want to thank Something New Entertainment for providing our lighting and sound for us this evening. So thank you. I also would like to thank Designs of Distinction. They are doing the photo canvas booth that's out in the atrium. So before the end of the evening, after presentations, be sure to stop by there. We certainly want to thank Be Seated, who donated the lounge furniture for us, and also the Shivari chairs that are over here by the silver linen. So thank you for that. Neil, Lisa, and Decor also donated the flowers that are over at the lounge area. So thank you to them. We certainly want to thank Everything Tented. They provided all of the high tops for us throughout the facility tonight. Unfortunately, Scott couldn't be with us tonight. But we also want to thank Breathtakers, event planners, and decorators. They did all of the centerpieces on all the tables in the room tonight, as well as the gorgeous huppah. So thank you very much. Charmaine and Dwayne are here, so let's give them a nice round of applause. Again, a great thank you to Around Downtown. They're still serving food for us, so we certainly want to thank them again. Rock the House Entertainment Group is doing a podcast for us tonight, so you'll be able to view this on the web at some point. We also want to thank Bridal Consulting by Eileen, of course. Thank you, Eileen. We appreciate it. Dale McDonald is running around taking photos. So photos by Dale, thank you very much. And I would like to offer a sincere thank you to Lanique for donating all of the linen and chair covers tonight. So thank you very much. Thank you. So we're going to open things up to some questions. We have Renee and Rabbi and Eileen here. If you have questions, if you'll raise your hand and I'll come out to you. But before we begin that session, Rabbi has a few things that he wants to explain about the ceremony that we did today.
First, let me give you a couple of quick hints. In your world as well as mine, we all know that communication is the key. So, you know, talk to your clients, talk to the synagogue where the wedding's going to be in, talk to the rabbi or the cantor or whoever is officiating. Most of what you see go on in a Jewish wedding is optional, right? Now, things become required because of, you know, they are used, custom of usage over centuries, as well as what's popular in any given community or any time. So be careful about that. I mean, I can do a wedding in under 8 minutes. In my office, I mean, it can be done. From a Jewish point of view of Jewish law, there's only three things required, right? There's exchange of property, which you saw with regard to the rings, right? The circling is the woman's symbol of acquiring the man. So there's going to be all the symbolism of acquisition. So there's exchange of property, a document, the ketubah, right? And the ketubah, you are wise to let the officiating clergy deal with that, right? I mean, you can advise your clients. There's all kinds of ways to do it. This is a traditional one, very, very beautiful. People don't want that. I mean, I keep them in my file. Most rabbis have just printed ones that you can use. They're not pretty, but they're, you know, they do the job. And then there's that in-between where you can order it at a store or online, and then the rabbi will have to put in the, we'll do something online to put the Hebrew names and the Hebrew date and all of that stuff. So you really want to refer. What kind of ketubah will be acceptable at the wedding will be 100% the decision of the clergy who's officiating. So you best to advise your clients to talk to their clergy about that. All right, that's the rule for you guys, which is do yourselves a favor and stay out of it. Because what you don't want is get to the wedding and the rabbi or the cantor gets up there and says, I can't use this ketubah. I mean, that you don't want. So be careful about that. And the third thing is sexual intercourse, which is the other way to get married. And in the Bible, one out of three was good enough. By the Middle Ages, the other things were also required as well. So let me go back a little bit to the rooms that Eileen was talking about. First of all, I would advise you that do not make any assumptions about what traditions people will or will not follow based on the denomination or the movement of the synagogue or of the clergy who are officiating, right? We live in a time when, at least in the Jewish community, a number of our younger generation are much more traditional than their parents. And we have had a couple of weddings here where the observance of having the men and the women separate and the men doing one thing and the women doing another, we've had a couple of weddings here already just in this past year where that happened, where that was done. So don't make any assumptions. There are people in the traditional community that are doing untraditional things. There are people in the Reform and conservative community that are doing very traditional things. One resource that I would say would be good for you as well as for your clients is a book by Anita Diamant, D-I-A-M-A-N-T. Some of you may know her as the author of The Red Tent. But she started out as a journalist and not as a novelist, and she wrote a wonderful book called The New Jewish Wedding. Don't let them get it out of a library because there's updated editions. What I like about that book is is that what Anita Diamant does in that book is she's not denominational. And she gives the couple the broad range of possibilities from which they can then choose and work with their clergy and work with you on deciding what to, you know, what to do at their wedding. So if they're looking for a book, that's the one that I recommend to people, right?
Yes,
okay.
Exactly,
right. That's so that's the book that I would recommend. You do have to have some semblance of the reading of the ketubah, so you're going to want to make sure the ketubah's over. So separate rooms, right? Here's what you need. What you definitely want, some separate places, Eileen said, right, to sign the ketubah. Now, the bedekin doesn't mean they're put on a deck, right? It's a Hebrew word that means inspection. Right? It has nothing to do with a deck. It has to do with inspection. And that comes from Jacob being snookered, all right, and getting Leah before he got Rachel. Since then, the guys in Judaism have always insisted on taking a look, right? Not seeing the bride right before the wedding is not a Jewish thing, although some people choose to do that. So you do want some kind of separate space where the ketubah can be signed, all right, and this ceremony of the bedek and the inspection can take place, which includes a little, you know, some blessings and some prayers and stuff like that, and then putting the veil down on the bride if she's wearing one, right, which not everybody does. If the groom's wearing a veil, we put it down at that time as well. How many of you had like that? Not yet, right? Wait, it'll come. Don't hold your, you know, hold your breath. It'll happen. Then, of course, wherever the wedding itself is taking place, in the synagogue, whatever, where it's taking place, and then, let me back up half a step. If it's the traditional scenario, we have the men and women. Eileen has explained that to you. After the ceremony, there is a custom called yichud. Okay, yichud means oneness, and from a point of view of Jewish law, we've done the exchange of property, the ring. We did the document, right, the ketubah, but we have to have the presumption of them having cohabitated, which means having sex, right? If anybody doesn't understand that, you know, I'll send you back to mama. And so in order to do that, there's a custom that the bride and groom have some alone time in a room, bread, wine. There is a custom that brides and grooms fast right before their wedding. So there's a little wine, a little drink, a little bread in there, and the bride and groom get time together alone. The practical value of that these days is that it really gives them a chance to spend a few minutes together because, as you well know, as you know better than I do, they ain't going to see each other for the rest of the evening. So that's the way I explain it to people. I mean, we're not that concerned about the halachic, the presumption in Jewish law that they've, you know, have cohabited, but really it's really nice to do that. So you may need to have either the same room where the ketubah was signed or some other space available if the bride and groom choose to do that. All right, that's my sort of fill in on some of the stuff.
Thank you, Rabbi. That's perfect. Any specific questions for Rabbi Danker? Yes.
Hi.
About anything.
Hi, Rabbi. Rabbi was my rabbi for my wedding, so thank you so much. And I remember the rings couldn't be
right. Diamond
under the ketubah, so I was wondering if you could elaborate on that.
No, that's fine. Under the chuppah, which I didn't mention, the chuppah is also very common and considered required by many people, but that's also customary. Traditionally in the Jewish wedding, when the ring that the bride gets has to be of one metal, gold, silver, whatever it is, not have any diamonds, not have any gemstones in it, and not have any breaks in it. So because the requirement is that the ring have a specific value. Gemstones can be argued about what the value is, specific weight of precious metal you can't argue about. And so the tradition in Jewish law is that the ring has to be one metal, not plated or anything like that, and not have any stones in it. Whether the couple wants to observe that, if the gal is giving the guy a ring as well, they may or may not want to observe that. And again, in terms of specific requirements, questions about that, I would again refer that back to the clergy who's officiating. Right, but very common that people get an inexpensive ring for the ceremony if they intend to wear a, you know, something with diamonds in it or something as their wedding band.
Thank you, Rabbi. Anyone else have any specific questions for the Rabbi?
Hi, I'm Sandy. I have two questions. I heard a male behind me walking out saying, now it's time for the bachelor party. So I was wondering if Jewish males have traditional bachelor parties, number one. And number two, in some religions, the couple has to meet with their religious leader prior to the ceremony, a couple weeks or sometimes months to get some counseling. Do you do that in your religion?
There is... yes, the answer is Jews do have bachelor parties. I mean, that's an American custom, all right? What exactly they do at those bachelor parties is a whole other question, but the answer is yes, they do, and, you know, the particular entertainment, but that's an American thing. That's not a, you know, that's not a Jewish or not or a Christian or a Muslim thing. That's an American thing. Obviously, the couple is going to need to meet with the clergy prior to the wedding, right? As you saw, or as you should have picked up by now, in a Jewish wedding, the hardcore requirements are very few. And a lot of it, the rest of it, is optional. You know, how much of an explanation does the rabbi give at each part of the wedding? Some couples, instead of having a rabbi talk about the explaining as you go along, will print a little booklet. And if you haven't seen them, we can call my office. We have some that we've had at, you know, weddings over the years. they'll print a little booklet. So yes, they're going to need to meet. First of all, hopefully the rabbi knows who they are. But there are so many options in the wedding, the way we do weddings these days, that the rabbi or the cantor really needs to talk it through with them so that the wedding comes out, so that the under the chuppah part of the wedding comes out the same way the rest of it does, which is what you guys are concerned with. So yes, now how much counseling takes place? We don't have a requirement like pre-Cana or anything like that, but some rabbis do require some kind of discussion. I don't personally, but I meet with a couple enough, you know, that if I think there's an issue, I'll flag it, you know, and deal with it that way. There are some other rabbis that require that you do some forms and fill out some stuff and go through some processes, but that's going to be the individual rabbi's choice. It's not required in Judaism. In fact, in Jewish tradition, a rabbi is really not allowed to refuse to do a wedding unless there's some impediment in Jewish law, some impediment in civil law, right, which is also an issue, right? You can't do that. I mean, we get old people, my great aunt Bertha, Allah Shalom, peace be upon her, you know, wanted me to marry her to her boyfriend at the time, but they didn't want to record it legally because they didn't want to screw up their Social Security. All right? So, I mean, you're not allowed to do that. So other than violating civil law or violating Jewish law and tradition, or really believing that the people don't know what they're doing, right? Other than that, you're really not allowed to not officiate. I mean, that's, you know what you were doing. And I have had those situations. I mean, I've had those situations. Not often, thank God. But, you know, one situation which was clearly abusive, and I convinced them to go to a psychologist who I know is a marriage counselor, and that broke up the relationship, which was fine. Another case where I didn't think the people knew what they were doing, where they were not sane, literally not sane enough to know what they were doing. They had met each other in the hospital. I mean, it was not great.
I know it's different for each congregation, but 2011, the average Reform rabbi handle either converts or mixed religious weddings inside of a synagogue?
Converts is not an issue. Somebody's converted to Judaism, they're Jewish, period, end of discussion. Whether who will recognize that conversion is a different issue within the movement, but that's not what the... As far as intermarriages goes, that's going to depend on each rabbi, each cantor, and each congregation as to how they approach that. Some rabbis in the Reform movement, some rabbis officiate at intermarriages, some rabbis and kinters do, some don't, and some do with certain restrictions. And also the policy of the clergy and of the congregation in each place will determine what is permitted in each place. So it's really case-by-case basis.
Thank you, Rabbi. I'd like to go ahead and open up some questions to the entire panel. So if you have any questions for Renee regarding the facility or other customs, Renee is extremely knowledgeable in many areas in the Jewish faith, or any questions for Eileen regarding what it takes to plan an event for a Jewish family. Weddings are obviously very intricate depending on if they are Orthodox or Reformed. So I'd like to open up the discussion to the rest of the panel. So any questions? While you're thinking of questions, Shannon, do you have a question?
There was a smaller temple over here to the right, over here. Renee, are they used for different reasons?
Not necessarily. Not necessarily used for different reasons. We have, this is our main sanctuary over here where we just were at, and I'm gonna take you over to our chapel, which is a smaller chapel. It accommodates 100 people, so we've actually done weddings in both worship spaces. It really just depends on the number of guests that you have, but both worship spaces can be used for a wedding.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, Shannon. Anyone else have any questions for the panel? I have a question. I wanted to know, and Eileen, this might be a great question for you. Have you ever been asked to plan a bachelorette party for a Jewish bride or a bachelor party for a Jewish gentleman? It seems to be a hot topic.
No.
Okay.
I mean, I've done luncheons for the girls, but not a bachelor party.
Okay. All right, very good.
But I don't think we touched on either. Some weddings, a lot of Jewish weddings are on Sunday through the summer because you cannot get married on the Sabbath.
Why don't you elaborate on that a little bit more?
So, you want
to
talk about it? No, go ahead.
As you've already figured out, a wedding, as I said, do you mind if I sit? It's been a long day. Wedding is a business arrangement. You know, the ketubah is actually, in terms of its text, it actually serves as a prenuptial agreement, is what it used to do in the old world, and therefore weddings cannot take place on the Sabbath or on holidays, and so most rabbis will not officiate till, you know, around sundown or after sundown on a Saturday night. So if you're planning for a Saturday night, especially during daylight savings time of blessed memory, since we just lost it. So check, you know, and make sure. And again, different rabbis will have different rules. Very traditional rabbis will not leave their home or their synagogue until after the Sabbath if the wedding is at a hotel, and so you might have to leave time for that too. So again, the best thing to do is going to check. So therefore, a lot of weddings take place, as Eileen said, a lot of Jewish weddings take place on Sundays, particularly in the summertime. There's a couple of blackout periods on the Jewish calendar that are observed differently depending on who the officiant is. So you need to check with that too. So before you absolutely nail down the date, have the couple talk to their rabbi. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I've learned, by the way, I don't know if this is happening with you guys yet, but it's now happened with me several times, is that the couple's out of town. You know, with the way people live and, you know, Cleveland being a place people move out of. I'm not approving of that, I'm just, fact of life. With a lot of times with the couple not living in the city here, I've now had several weddings that were planned, with a couple of personal meetings, but a lot of Skype meetings. So I've been using Skype to plan some weddings, which is I'm finding very, very useful, especially when the couple's out of town.
One of those traditions you talked about, the yichud, which is after the wedding when the bride and groom are supposed to go in a room alone, I actually kind of incorporate that in my non-Jewish weddings. But I usually have them, once we get to the place of the reception, have a little room with some of the hors d'oeuvres and let the bride and groom totally unwind alone. And then I always make sure they have water and then a nice drink in there, whether it's wine. And then I come back because I always, if they're going to join their cocktail hour, they can't really talk to people and taste the hors d'oeuvres anyways. And it's been really like a nice thing that couples always say, oh, I love that. That was such a great idea. So I've kind of incorporated into some of my non-Jewish weddings. But I also wanted to let some of you know that do weddings, or if you, you know, are in a hotel and, well, if you meet a Orthodox rabbi and you're a woman, you don't want to, you're not supposed to touch them. So if you put your hand out to shake his hand, he probably won't put his out because he's not supposed to touch a woman. So just FYI if you weren't aware of that. And then always make sure if it's a facility and you're going to do that prayer over the challah, which we talked about earlier, the hamotzi over the braided challah bread, that the facility doesn't cut the bread. That's happened beforehand in the past, because that's part of the ceremony is to bless it and cut it. So just a little tip. And then just a couple of the trends in Jewish weddings. I think I've seen a lot of like elongated chuppahs, chuppahs with branches, chuppahs with beautiful fabric. And I've done a lot of ceremonies in the round if the wedding is at a hotel, or you know, where the chuppah's in the middle and we have all the chairs either around or in four quadrants. And it's nice because you can see the faces of the bride and groom and then not always stare at their back. But I've always learned that it doesn't matter how you stand. I've done girl, boy outside of the chuppah as long as you're under the chuppah a certain way. So you can be a little creative. And one of the weddings I remember that kind of is most memorable is I had a couple that they were divorced and they went to a fundraiser and this couple met and they had a beautiful Jewish wedding. And after the ceremony, the kids came up to the chuppah after they broke the glass and they sang and clapped and danced the parents out. And I always thought that was such a nice, lively part of the wedding. And then, let me see what else, I just had a couple things to go over. Oh, I heard that also in Orthodox weddings that a lot of the bride and grooms want to be married under the open sky because they have the gaze of God on them. I've not had a wedding like that, but that's something I've learned. And as the rabbi said, the gold ring or the ring has to be solid. I did a wedding where the rabbi, it was a grandmother's ring, and he made the groom, you know, take a dollar or $5 bill and buy the ring from him because it is supposed to be owned by him. So I thought that was interesting. But the one thing too is Jewish ceremonies, what makes them different than other ceremonies or non-Jewish ceremonies is they're usually 20 minutes to 30 minutes long. And I did an Orthodox wedding. I was putting out the place cards and I didn't want anybody taking them before the ceremony. And we were starting to put them out. We were doing a beautiful circle table, so they were going in a circle, and the next thing I heard, the glass break, and we were like throwing the cards out. It was 15, 20 minutes. It was so short. So they are short, and the difference is the girls stand on the right, and the guys on the left, which is different then. So every once in a while when I'm doing a wedding, I have to think about that. But that kind of covers my notes.
Quick question about the chuppah. I know it was mentioned earlier, it has to be open on four sides. Mm-hmm. Is it true it must always be covered?
Yeah, it's the chuppah is one of these customs that is, you know, borderline law at this point. You can get married, you can be perfectly married without a chuppah altogether. It's a custom. But when you have one, it's usually open, you know, like Abraham's tent, which is the Torah portion we're reading this week, you know, a tent to welcome, because it's supposed to represent the miniature sanctuary, the miniature holy place, temple that you're building as your new home. It represents the new home and the sanctity of the new home. But nowadays, chuppahs come in all shapes and sizes. One of the things that... you know, sometimes they have now a thing I learned about many years ago, a flying chuppah, a chuppah that's suspended from the ceiling where nothing touches the ground at all. And also the other option with a chuppah is sometimes people prefer a chuppah that's being held. We actually have the poles for that, where they'll use the Talit, a prayer shawl, or they'll use something else, and that either four people or four groups of people will be standing there holding the chuppah, in which case you've got a plan for the procession to come in and somebody opening the chuppah, and you have to have that rehearsed, otherwise that can get a little dicey up there. The important thing is that the bride and groom are under the chuppah, not anybody else. So if you're dealing with a prayer shawl or a chuppah of moderate size, which ours is in here, I don't know if how many of you noticed, but when I got up there, I took the little table that the wine was on and I pulled it back. Because where it was, the bride and groom were going to be outside the chuppah. So I pulled it back almost instinctively, because it didn't matter if I was out the back. What mattered was that they were in the chuppah. So when you're setting up for the wedding, when you're setting it up, and you do need a table under the chuppah and a place for the ketubah, either an easel or if it's a small ketubah on the table, but you need a place for the wine, you need a place for the, I usually tell whoever's carrying the rings down the aisle to just, when they get under the, get up there, just to put the rings there so I don't have to deal with them. I also don't let them leave it in a box, and I don't, that I just get it up there. So you need the little table. The table can be behind the rabbi or the cantor. It can be off to the side. As long as it's within reach, it's fine. But you want to make sure that the table's not in the front of the chuppah because the bride and groom have to be inside.
Mm-hmm. And then the only other thing, Vince, is for a reception, the only other traditional thing is that they usually dance the hora. And so I think it's important to always have a couple chairs on the dance floor somewhere or nearby that have arms on them, because that when they're lifted up, and every once in a while you have a real tall guy that's really bouncing the chair, so that I know the bride feels much more comfortable if there's arms. So that's always something I try to advise people on, that to be ready when that happens, just to have a couple chairs there.
All right, excellent. We are running short on time, so in lieu of the shortage of time, I'd like the panel to help me choose our winners for our raffle prizes, and then our panel will be available for questions. Feel free to approach them about anything that might be on your mind. And if Renee does have time before her board meeting, anyone who would like a tour of the rest of the facility, including the chapel, she'll be happy to take you on a tour. So, Eileen, why don't you grab the first one, mix those around a little bit for us? All right, and we're going to give away the Cleveland Zoo passes. And these are going to go to Marie Campbell from Orencina's Creations. Is Marie still here? Very nice. All right, thank you. Congratulations. Four passes to the Cleveland Metro Park Zoo, donated by Rachel Fuller from the zoo. We have several passes to the Maltz Museum. So, Rabbi, choose a winner for me.
Winner is. Well, again. You're allowed to win, too.
All right. Did I throw her card? No, I didn't throw her card back in there. This must be, no, Marie Campbell, did you have two in there? We're going to pass this one on, if that's okay with you. We're going to let someone else get a chance. She'll be at the zoo. She'll be at the Maltz Museum. She'll be everywhere.
I do that at the dry cleaner, but I never win. Kristen Nolte, All Occasions.
Kristen, all right. Here you go. Thank you, Rabbi. All right, Renee, why don't you pull a winner for me? Feel free to mix those around a little bit.
Okay, get this together. Okay. Sonia Scully from Marriott.
All right. Thank you.
They came all the way from there.
Thank you. All right, Eileen, your turn again. I have three more.
Oh, wow. God's a pretty good hit tonight.
Melissa Metters from the from Serenity. I'm sorry. Sensity? Is Melissa still here? I don't see her. No. All right, she forfeits. Next. That's what happens when you leave early.
Uh-huh, you have to stay. You can't cut out early.
Another one, Marriott, Cindy Scott.
Cindy, are you still here? All right, Cindy, come on. Cindy recently relocated to Cleveland from Florida. So welcome to Cleveland. Is there anyone else who does not have a card in here? I thought I grabbed everybody. Do you want to stick a card in there? Well, you know you should have brought cards. All right. Yeah? Your name tag? Go ahead, I got more prizes.
Where's the name on here? Oh, Cheryl Edwards from VIP Dreams.
All right, very nice. Thank you, Cheryl.
Nice business card.
All right, Mary Frances, how many do we have left?
Two.
Go ahead, put that in there. Thank you. Thank you. All right, Aileen, mix them up a little bit. Pull me another winner.
Oh, my goodness.
Too funny. All right, Jessa, it looks like you're going to the Maltz Museum.
Yes. Will you come with me, Rabbi?
All right, and I got one left. Rabbi, go ahead. Do the honors for me.
Positively Cleveland, Barbara Felt.
All right. Thank you, Rabbi. Congratulations, Barbara. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we certainly want to let everybody know that ISIS Cleveland will be having our membership drive December 13th. Take out your Blackberries, take out your iPhones, get your calendars up, mark it down.
Isn't he adorable?
December 13th, it's going to be at the Foundation Room in the House of Blues. Okay, look for the invitation. It should be arriving in your email boxes shortly. So please certainly come join us. If you have any questions about ISIS, or if you're interested in joining ISIS or want a sponsorship opportunity, please make sure you flag one of the members down. If I can have all the members of ISIS, board members and committee members and any member, please stand for me, myself included. Thank you. But if you have any questions about joining ISIS, we certainly want to make sure that you approach one of us, and we'll be happy to tell you all the wonderful things going on within the organization and what great opportunities there are for some recognition and to grow your businesses. So with that, I'm going to welcome you to approach our panel. If anyone has questions that you'd like to ask them, please feel free. And also, Renee will be doing tours of the facility if you'd like to see more of this great space. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
This podcast has been brought to you by Rock the House, your source for production, entertainment, and multimedia solutions. RTHgroup.com.